pray that the technology gods are kind to us today. I'm Jameson Lopp. I'm a CTO of Casa, and I'm actually here today to talk about why I believe enterprise adoption of Lightning Network technology is incredibly important for the health and optimal use of the network. So while I have not been dealing with rolling out enterprise level Lightning technology myself, this is something that I've actually been thinking about for almost 4 years now. So why enterprise Lightning? There are a few, of course, answers to that, like lower fees, instant withdrawals. These are obvious features of the Lightning Network, which is why almost anybody would want to use it over on-chain transactions. But when we start to look at the economics of what is in play, think about the way that your regular day-to-day transactions work. And in fact, if you think back to the last transaction that you have made personally, was that with a business or with an individual? If your last transaction was with a business, could you just raise your hand? Looks like a lot. So if your last transaction that you made in the real world was with another individual, could you raise your hand? So it seems like probably the majority of recent transactions were with businesses. I think that you find if you go back through your own accounting ledger and the payments that you've made, most of them, of course, are going to be with companies, with enterprises that are providing services. So if we make the assumption that the economics on a mainstream adoption Lightning Network are going to be similar to what we're seeing today in the real world, I think it makes a lot of sense that we want to get as many enterprises onboarded as possible. And I'll go into a lot more detail about why I think that is important. Also, another, of course, answer is we can get some improved privacy, especially with various services that are doing AML KYC. I think that a lot of people would really prefer to have a peace of mind that they could make a deposit onto an exchange or make a withdrawal from a service and not have to worry about the flow of that value over the time and in the future being tracked via, you know, on-chain analysis or other methods. And the main point that I'm going to be talking about in detail is that the architecture of the Lightning Network itself is predicated upon the idea that the net flow of money in an economy is close to zero. It's that you have value flowing in one direction, but eventually it'll be flowing all around and around. And you're not just moving all of the value, you know, from one party to another and it just sits there. Any healthy economy is going to continuously have value that is flowing around and around through various enterprises and individuals. Just a sort of side note, I don't think that fee income is going to be much of a driver of adoption, but rather the savings that enterprises are going to get by not having to receive tons of UTXOs and consolidate them and pay lots of on-chain fees to actually consume those UTXOs. This was a study that BitMEX Research did that showed that maybe you could eke out about a 1% annual return on investment if you're like really good at routing. But you know, that's also very early days, and I think that over time, as Lightning Network becomes greater and greater adopted, there's going to be more and more competition for the routing of value through the network. So the fees are probably going to go down. Now, 4 years ago, when I first started researching this Lightning Network thing because I wanted to write an article about it, I asked Lalu, I was like, hey man, what do you have to say in response to all these people who are saying, well, the economics of the Lightning Network are going to result in an extreme level of centralization, so we're just going to end up with a few big hubs and everybody else is going to be a spoke off of those hubs. And he responded to me and he was like, well, yeah, man, the people that are saying this, they're actually got a really good point because there's going to be a lot of centralization. There's going to be, you know, some concentrated areas of economic liquidity where you have bigger players, but then also you're going to have some smaller players, and then you're going to have a lot of individuals. And so what we really think is going to happen is that there's going to be a scale-free network topology. And I was like, a scale-free network topology? I've never heard of that, but that's a very interesting theory. It makes sense to me, and I guess we'll just see how it plays out. And hopefully you can see it's probably pretty faint, but if you actually go to any of these Lightning Network Explorers today, it appears to me that the topology that is forming on the Lightning Network is in fact scale-free, that while there is some centrality in certain areas of the Lightning Network, that it's fairly well distributed, and that, you know, because more players can join the network, leave the network at will, that I am not particularly concerned about a hub and spoke model actually happening, even if we have greater enterprise adoption. So I've got a few video simulations here. This first one on the left, we've got A, B, C, and D. These are people who are buying coffee every day. We've got E, F, G, and H. They're selling coffee every day. And this simulation is showing a very simplistic network where the value is basically moving from the payers to the enterprises. And thanks to AJ Talens for creating this simulation a few years ago. But what you end up seeing is that all of the value moves across the network, and then eventually it just stops. You get through about 30 different sets of iterations before it blows up. Now, this simulation is doing the same thing, but you may notice at the bottom we've got this new entity, this Exchange X. Exchange X is not highly connected to many other nodes. It doesn't even have a ton of liquidity. But what it is doing is it is providing the ability for payers and payees to make out-of-band payments to the exchange in order to rebalance their channel. So if A, B, C, or D finds that all of the value on their channel is on the far end and they can no longer push any value to buy coffee, they can actually send out-of-band some fiat to the exchange, and the exchange will then basically rebalance their channel for them by pushing value over the Lightning Network. And then vice versa with the enterprises E, F, G, and H, is that when all of the value ends up on their side of the channel and they can't receive any more payments, they just push some value over the Lightning Network to the exchange, and it can pay them out of band through some other payment network. So the main point to all of this is that as soon as we have some halfway decent liquidity provider, you know, enterprise-level exchange that is integrated with Lightning Network, we can now make the use of these Lightning channels much more long-lived. With the previous simulation, you can only get through about 30 payments from each consumer before they ran out of the ability to push more value, and they would have to close the channel and reopen it or something like that. With this very simple simulation, it basically becomes unlimited. The video itself goes for the equivalent of 3 years, and we just stopped rendering it after that point because there's no point continuing. But this is the main point that I'm trying to make, is that having enterprises, especially exchanges, is going to make the use of Lightning Network and the reuse of long-lived channels much more feasible. So let's go to the next slide now. This is from Chainalysis a few years ago, where they were looking at general activity of addresses on the network, basically showing that about 150 million of recently active addresses could be ascribed to various enterprises, whereas about 25 million appeared to be maybe individual wallets. So this is just giving you some context of general activity on the network. This is more recent. If you're looking at payments per day, which is basically TX outputs per day, there's a pretty strong case to be made that somewhere around half of all of the transaction outputs that are created are in fact coming from exchanges. And this is just from looking at the transactions that have many outputs on them, which are almost necessarily either a batch payment from an exchange or possibly a coin join, though there aren't a ton of coin joins happening in comparison to exchange activity, and also not all exchanges are batching their output, so it probably evens out pretty well. And once again, the point being that if 50% of the on-chain activity is coming from exchanges, then getting these providers on the Lightning Network gives us a potentially large optimization for reducing on-chain, you know, block space. This is looking at a specific transaction that was a Binance withdrawal. This just happened yesterday. I pulled it up on OXT.me. It's very easy for anyone to go to some of these wallet analysis services and actually look at the transactions that are known to be coming from exchanges. And this particular transaction is fairly standard. It had 40-something outputs. And six of those outputs were all going to BitMEX. A handful of them were going to Coinbase. Another handful of them were going to HitBTC. And the main point here being that when exchanges are doing these large batch payments, they don't actually necessarily know that maybe a lot of the outputs in a single transaction are going to the same place, because they're just receiving a pseudonymous Bitcoin address, and they're just batching them all together and sending them. Now, the reason why Lightning Network is so interesting is that it can automatically deduplicate this. You know, you just give a Lightning invoice, and it gets routed automatically. If there's a lot of activity going back and forth, the Lightning Network, as a protocol, is automatically deduplicating a lot of these back and forth transfers. This is another bit of analysis from Bitfury, which is probably hard to read, but essentially this was from 2018 showing that there are a number of different exchanges. This was done at a country aggregation level, but basically showing that billions and billions of dollars in on-chain activity are only going from one exchange to another exchange. It's just back and forth, back and forth. And to actually hit on that a little bit more, this is another Chainalysis diagram from a few years ago. All of the blue edge activity are exchanges, yellow are some merchant providers, and the upper left quadrant are some darknet markets. But once again, the main thing that I want you to take away from this is just look at all of the activity that's going from blue to blue, exchange to exchange. Traders on one exchange may be arbitraging with another exchange. They may just be rebalancing their risk profile. Who knows what the traders are actually doing, but there's just so much evidence that shows that a ton of our transaction activity is between exchanges. So imagine how much of this redundancy you could deduplicate if instead the value was flowing over something like Lightning Network. Now, Balaji Srinivasan gave a talk back in, I think, 2013, where he was talking about network effects and how we grow the network from an economic standpoint. I think that this is a pretty accurate chart, though it is probably missing the exchange component to it, because as we're well aware, merchants and users aren't only interacting with each other at this point, because we don't have a fully circular 100% contained crypto economy. I think if we ever want to get to the point where we have a 100% circular crypto economy, we need a stepping stone. And that stepping stone is getting these exchanges onboarded so that while we're not using Bitcoin as a unit of account, the exchanges can still convert things to fiat and basically be able to pay their suppliers in other currencies until we hopefully eventually one day get to the point where merchants can pay their suppliers in crypto directly, and those suppliers can pay their employees and other enterprise companies that they deal with also in crypto. So what do enterprises actually need? I wasn't quite sure how well-timed this talk would be, but it actually seems to be right on the money, because if you look at your schedule, you'll find several other talks that are happening at this conference that are specifically focusing on some of the needs that are going to have to be met in order for enterprises to be comfortable with using Lightning Network technology. So what are they going to need? Well, they're going to need really high, reliable services. In many cases, these enterprises may be dealing with large sums of money, or in the cases of exchanges, they may be dealing with money that is technically not even theirs. So the risk factor, the level of risk that they're going to be willing to take is going to be a lot lower. So we're going to need the ability to, you know, run large numbers of nodes redundantly that can be failed over without losing money. The exchanges and high-volume services are going to need much better tools to help them manage the liquidity on these nodes and hopefully eventually also, you know, plug into their exchanges and other liquidity providers so that they can rebalance channels without even having to think about it. Honestly, from a a standpoint of even having to deal with channel balancing, I don't think that Lightning Network will ever be able to get to mainstream level adoption until we can really abstract away the need to even be worrying about that. From a scalability standpoint, of course, a lot of these companies are going to need to be able to add and remove nodes as needed so that the load balancing is not, you know, overwhelming a single node, causing it to slow down and crash. You're also going to need a much better history of being able to query what has happened on these nodes. From a personal note, like something that I ran into a lot when I was at BitGo and realized that one of the reasons BitGo was able to amass a large number of enterprise customers was because the standard software like Bitcoin Core was not really designed to be enterprise-level scalable software. That's fine. I mean, it works well for what it's trying to do. But what a lot of companies ended up running into is they would say, okay, we want to add Bitcoin support, or we want to create a Bitcoin-based company, and they would basically throw this problem at the developers, and the developers would spool up Bitcoin Core and start making RPC calls to add wallets and add accounts and keep track of things. And then they would find, you know, once they got to like 100,000 users and accounts, that Bitcoin Core would slow down to a crawl and it would not scale very well. And this was one of the things that BitGo as an enterprise was able to basically break out a lot of the different pieces of functionality that were commonly being used from Bitcoin Core, break them out into a scalable architecture, and then essentially sell access to that to other companies so that they could have, you know, highly performant, reliable, and robust queries that they could make to a service to get data and to interact with the network. From a security standpoint, these are hot wallets, so we're going to need much better level security than just, you know, keeping private keys in memory on some virtual machine. Preferably having actual hardware security modules that are managing the hot keys, and then having other systems to help manage the keys that don't necessarily have to be hot. I know Chris Stewart is going to be talking about some of the ways that you can approach the private key security with Lightning nodes later on today. And from a business perspective, additional policy enforcement that could perhaps also be done at the HSM level, but basically some additional level of assurance so that you are fairly confident that someone won't be able to just make a single API call and drain all of your Lightning wallets. And of course, boring old accounting tools, being able to put together history on a like per user basis and figure out, you know, what different users' balances within your system are going to be very important. So I think that covers most of it, but in general, you know, this is something that I think is going to be ongoing for the foreseeable future, and I'm hopeful that we can get some people thinking about these problems, building some tools, hopefully even open source tools that can be collaboratively built on, rather than us ending up with a system where every enterprise has to solve all of these problems independently and ends up duplicating a lot of the work across different companies in this space. So I hope I convinced you that having enterprise adoption and especially exchange adoption is important for a Lightning Network. So if you're not building these tools yourself, feel free to badger the support queues at your local exchange and ask, when Lightning? Thank you.